You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
We just got this.
Six on a Wednesday hump day, and joining us again is Michael McDowell. And every once in a while, we let artillery types on, and he's one of the few that passed the screener and has been allowed to come on the program. Retired major, and Mike. First of all, he's now. The executive director of the Soldiers Project in Los Angeles. So, first of all, thanks for coming on and doing this. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me again. Looking forward to it.
Before we talk, I want to talk current events before we talk business and the Soldiers Project. Hazing, yesterday, story in Marine Corps Times about 1st Marine Division, Commanding General Eric Smith, intends to put an end to it. Everybody of the 16 people discharged, every one of them is a corporal, or a lance corporal or below. How do you stop it? These guys are not combat veterans, right? These are UDP guys, and the division isn't fighting anymore. You know, the 2MAF has got responsibility for stuff going on in Raqqa. You know, maybe onesies and twosies, but our battalions aren't rotating into bad places anymore. How do you put an end to hazing? You have any thoughts on that?
Wow.
Yeah. There you go.
Wow. That's my cerebral answer.
Yeah. Hope you had your coffee.
I think that, where do you even start with that one? You know, I think it's the first of all, we recruit young men and women who are, 18 years old, 18 to 20, let's just say that window, and they just want to belong to something. I mean, I think it's human behavioralism 101, but I think that they, in that quest for wanting to be a part of something, and they are, they know from the day that they put their feet on those yellow prints, they're part of something very unique and very special, that fraternity. And I think that there's a natural pecking order that certainly happens where, the Lord of the Flies kind of mindset where, that water just starts getting up there in temperature. And I don't even think that the frog knows, that it needs to jump out at that time. And I think that as a commanders, we don't have any tolerance for it because we have so many other more important things to do, with regard to readiness. And I think these are the things that happen, when you don't have those strong sergeants that are down in those barracks or down in those, in the field. I've had the issue particularly on the gun line. When I first took command of battery command, I was probably in the middle of my first in 2009, late 2009, early 2010 in 29 Palms. And I remember specifically, what is hazing? Obviously is it physical? Is it emotional? Where they were, guys were, they were running powder or running, projectiles around down to the next gun, or they were, trying to even up the stuff. And, they were writing on their, they were taking a pen and doing something. I think they wrote on their face or their head or something with a gun line number, what particular gun they were from, and you just gotta be on that stuff all the time. And I don't know, how you get rid of it. You just really, really discipline them hard in front of their people, and maybe, that stops them. I don't know.
What do you mean? I mean, come on, you got out as a major, you're backbone of the Marine Corps. What do you mean you don't know?
You know, it's supervision, and obviously there was something that was missing there in those, you know, again, I'm not read up on that particular instance, but, you know, whether it was in the barracks or somewhere where there was an isolation.
No, there's a whole different series of issues. It wasn't one issue, it was a series of them, and it's interesting that the article says that General Smith, in a letter to his commanders, said that was obtained by Marine Corps Times, said, essentially, I feel like I've been flipped the bird by a whole bunch of lance corporals and below in this division, and I'm not having that. And so this is now job one, to stop hazing in the division. And so I think we're all sympathetic to that. Like, hell yeah. I mean, I'll tell you, I remember the first time. And let me tell you, it's not like I was never hazed, okay? And it's not like I didn't participate in some of the rituals that would be called hazing now, because I did, right? And I would tell you that most of them were fun. They were guy things. But what happens is the idiots among us take that and they hurt people doing it. The whole blood stripe thing, the first time I saw that, I stopped it. And they were doing it, you know, back in the 80s, they were doing it, you know, right after the formation in front of God and everybody. Oh, it's just what we do. And, I mean, you're having, you know, if those of you who've never seen it, I mean, it is kneeing somebody in the thigh from the side, creating a stripe of bruises down their thigh. There's been guys who've gone to the hospital, you know, for hemorrhaging, guys who've been put out of the Marine Corps by this ceremony. And you see it, right? And it's designed in its best form, it's designed, you know, to gently knee somebody. But again, it's like the Shellback ceremony. What happens when sadistic people get a hold of it? It turns into something crazy. And so you see that, and you're like, you got to be kidding me. Mm-hmm. Stop that.
Well, they take it to the next level. Next thing, if it
stupid.
You know, and that's where, yeah. Well, and again, we're a warrior ethos, and we're not the normal. You know, we're barbarians. I mean, that's what we do. We hunt people down and kill them. You know, that's where I think that, you know, people want to be taking it to the next level. You know, and that's where, again, when it comes down to injuring, you know, young people, that's just a, you know, we just can't do that. But I don't know. I mean, other than just increasing supervision, you know, again, we talk out of both sides of our mouths. We want to give them freedom within the structure. But then again, we're not watching them close enough, you know, and I got to tell you, from the general officer level, you know, and I hate to say that we're all type A personalities, but we all want to do well, you know, and that's obviously the right thing to say. I know General Smith, when he was at 29 Palms,
right,
when he was a one star, you know, spoke to our group when we were up there doing, I think we were doing Des Fire X or something, but anyway, but again, a great man, and certainly we want to, you know, get out ahead of this stuff as much as possible, but it isn't tolerated, and that's, you know, I just,
well, but here's, I'm going to read you an email, and then I'll let you comment on it, because it's kind of interesting. Matt, good morning. Getting a chance to listen now that the Marine Corps has taken the cock block off all Marine radio. I'm loving this. This is awesome. Here's a question for you. In this whole hazing shit, where are the staff NCOs? Like, the officers are really going to put an end to this? You want it ended? There's the group that should end it. What, are they going to stand around and say, I didn't know it was going to happen? The staff NCOs in the Marine Corps have to get off their ass and have to get moving. And that starts with the sergeant majors. Being the senior advisor, there's baggage that should come with this. That's why I was so pleased to see when the CO, the XO, and the command master chief were terminated on the USS Fitzgerald. He's not just a guy giving advice. He's responsible. We don't hold them responsible enough. So when you see this shit going on and the officers are talking, seriously, we are at least an arm's length away. Who's right up next to it? We know who. It's the staff NCOs, in particular, the staff sergeants and the sergeants of the Marine Corps. Until they put an end to it, this won't stop. But what you have in reality is this is one of the great traditions of the Marine Corps that they're telling us not to do. But this is old Corps. This is the way they used to do it, when Marines were Marines, instead of these candy-ass pussies that we have now. When Marines won wars and fought. Guys who fought on Iwo Jima did this shit. Guys who were at the Chosen did this shit. Guys who were at Khe Sanh did this shit. They were men. We want to be men. We want to be Marines. We want a piece of this. So let's go, boys. Let's do some hazing. That's what they think. And as long as staff NCOs and sergeants allow it, you're going to see corporals and lance corporals do it. And it doesn't matter what General Smith says. It'll still go on. It's time to hold people accountable. And I say, where you find hazing, go get the first person above them in the chain of command, charge them with dereliction of duty, and then their career too. Then you want to see some lazy asses get off their lazy ass? There's a remedy for you, Mac. Stick that one in your pipe and smoke it this morning. And I want to hear you and the major both comment on it. Okay. So, hey, McDowell, you're the guest. Go ahead. Take that one off.
Well, I think they, whoever this person was, they hit it on the head. I mean, remember, our continuity comes with those senior staff enlisted Marines, and I think that until they've seen what right and what wrong, you know, look like in their careers, and I think that if you're going to change the culture, it's got to come from them. Obviously, we need to hold the standard that we're not going to tolerate it, and we're going to NJP whoever's doing it. But I think exactly right. They're the ones who got to, you know, inject into this thing, saying we're done with this. This is not going to happen, you know, in our Corps as it stands today. And I think you're right. I will tell you though, what's the difference between harassment and overall hazing? You know, and I had this other issue that happened, and I NJP'd the guy, or actually there was two of them that were on duty. And this is typical hazing, I think, that you know, again, I don't know these particular cases individually, but you have new recruits. Well, they're actually not recruits, they're Marines. They're new joined Marines in their alphas, and they just came into 11th Marines, and they checked in that night. So there's half dozen of them or whatever there were coming up to the barracks. And we have these motivated sergeants, a sergeant and a corporal maybe or something, whoever's on duty. And they come in and they realize that their alphas are all messed up because they've been laying in them and everything else over the course of the day. Well, they then at that point bring them upstairs to the third deck and presumably get pissed off, and they start getting, you know, drill instructor, you know, neither one of them been in the drill field, obviously, start dumping up all their shit, and they start dumping it into over the bear, you know, the banister, all their personal effects.
Wait, you know, over the, off the third deck, over the,
yes,
over the balcony?
Throwing all their clothes, their sea bags, all the stuff that they had, they threw them over the side, you know, individually, like each piece of item of clothes all over, you know, down three flights of deck. And of course, you know, again, that's purely hazing. I mean, there's no training value in that whatsoever. And I tell you what, as a company grade officer trying to, you know, build my team, that was just unheard. I mean, I was just perplexed by that. And of course, we discipline them as necessary. But that culture where they all want to become DIs, you know, and they want to just implement that stress, you know, back on these poor recruits, or not recruits, but, you know, new Marines, new joins, they're Marines. They've already been through it. And
but you understand. When I joined, I got treated like that too. It's part of becoming a Marine. It's part of coming to this organization. If it was good enough for me, by God, it's sure as hell going to be good enough for them.
That's exactly the culture.
Yeah.
And what's got to be changed by the staff NCOs.
Yeah, I will tell you. I mean, to me, it is a staff NCO thing. The officers can get involved, but if that's your solution, then the linking file isn't there. The linking file isn't there. And until they're held accountable for the conduct of those Marines in those barracks, then the problem's not going away. It's got to be a thing that staffing COs make sure that Marines know that we don't do this. We don't do that. One more quick email about it, and then we'll move on to the Soldier Project. How come it's not called the Marine Project? With you in charge, I mean, shouldn't we change that? I mean, I don't know how many different, but when you're on All Marine Radio, you know that's got to be the first. That's got to be the first question. So we'll get to that in a second. One more, Mac. I've heard you tell stories about psychological sit-ups and hazing. I've heard you tell stories about pinning the rank and getting it over the collarbone of somebody so it doesn't move so much so you can drive it into their skin. So it's not like you didn't play these games as well. How we eliminate it is a good question. Some of these traditions have been around for years. Some of them are pretty harmless, and I believe the ones that you engaged in are pretty harmless. Psychological sit-ups. Watching somebody do a sit-up into the crack of somebody's ass, I don't care where you are. I don't care what year that is. That shit is funny. Let me tell you this. It was funny.
I laugh at that? Why is it that we laugh?
Because it's
like
funny.
Jackass. Like the show the movie Jackass. You know, it's like we just sit there watching our wives go, what are you watching? And I'm like, this is funny crap. This is freaking hilarious. I mean, this is what I want to do that, you know, good judgment stops me from running in front of a bull. You know what I mean? And just.
The story behind the first time I went to the field, and it might have not been my first time, but it was the first time that we went, and I guess they had enough guys to appropriately initiate everybody in Charlie 1-5. They said, hey, Lieutenant Mac, you got to go through the initiation. And I said, okay. And so, you know, you have the lieutenant standing around smiling and whatnot. And I'm like, I'm up for it. What is it? You can either eat to qualify or you can do psychological sit-ups. And I'm thinking, I could do sit-ups. I'm not going to embarrass myself, so I'll do sit-ups. And so I said, I'll do psychological sit-ups. And they're like, all right, Lieutenant's going to do psychological sit-ups. So those two are going to do psychological sit-ups. These guys are going to...
I totally know where this is going, by the way. This is where you're like, man, I should have taken the spade. Go ahead.
No. I know. Are you kidding me? I was like, I can do sit-ups, man. And they're like, and I said, well, what's the deal with psychological sit-ups? They said, well, when you're blindfolded... And you start doing them, you'll get vertigo. Nobody's done more than 12. And I'm thinking, more than 12, man, I'll smoke that shit, okay? And so I'm all about it. I'm fired up to do them. And my company commander walks up behind me, and he says, you're not doing psychological sit-ups. And I said, why not? I'm a second lieutenant in 1984.
A motivator.
Yeah, motivator. Motivator. Yeah. I joined 1-5 late in the training cycle, and we're going to deploy. This is probably October. We're going to deploy in the early part of February to UDP. So I said, sir, I'm good at sit-ups. And he looked at me. He goes, Mac, look at me. And I said, yes, sir. He said, you're not doing them. I said, yes, sir. He said, you'll need to qualify. He said, tell him right now. I said, I'm going to need to qualify. And they all looked at me. And I said, the CO's making me. And he did me a solid there. I'll never say a bad word about him. So, that's the story behind that. And the email finishes up like this. It's the staff NCOs. The email is right. As a former staff NCO, I didn't play that game. I knew what my guys were doing, and I know the idiots that were going to do it too. And when we would get new joins, I would yoke those jackasses up, and I would say, I'm going to be around. And the sergeants know they're going to be around. And if I see any stupid shit, if I see any marks on their bodies, I'm coming to you. And I never had a problem with it because I put them on notice. And what did I do? Oh, I got off my dead ass and I supervised it. I made my sergeants I made sure my sergeants were in the area supervised. So, it all goes back to leadership. That whole stupid little phrase, expect what you inspect, is absolutely true, and it applies here. what you have staff NCOs and sergeants who walk away from this stuff. And another piece of this, and I've heard you talk about this, is this whole notion that the barracks belong to them now. Wherever that started was a mistake. It was so wrong-headed because you have a bunch of dumb young guys there, and they'll do a lot of stupid shit, and you're turning it into a college dormitory. The units that are still doing that and haven't crushed that, it's a barracks. It needs to be inspected. There needs to be a plan. It's not a dormitory. It's not college. When we lose the structure, we lose discipline. And I will tell you what, there's a fight going on in those barracks, and I'm talking about the combat arms. I would love to see what it's like in the support MOSs. It must be like Haight-Ashbury in the 60s in San Francisco.
You know as well as I do though those as barbaric as some of the combat arms folks are, the data dinks and everybody else that are 50 pound brains, those guys, they haze in a different way. It is what it is, and I think you're onto something there with regard to the staff NCOs.
Did you ever experience that whole the barracks belong to them now? We don't really inspect. Did you ever experience that?
Well, I gave them space with there because I didn't want to be in their trash unless I was actually going to do an actual walkthrough. But again, that first sergeant, I expected my first sergeant to be down there, to be down there on that Thursday, field day, they don't belong to you. They belong to the United States government. You just happen to be there. I'm checking it. We're looking at it, making sure you get, again, you want to eliminate drugs, don't test. You want to eliminate hazing, don't inspect. It's human behavioralism. Look at universities. Why do fraternities go through hazing events? Why do they do that? It's not just the Marine Corps. Unfortunately, we have a requirement, to take care of them. So that they're not hurt and injured, because it's readiness, in the end.
I had a general officer tell me, with the whole Marines United thing, they said, he said he went to a convention or some kind of gathering, whether he was speaking or not, and there was a lot of college administrators there. And he said, we're watching how you guys as an organization deal with this because we don't have nearly the authority that you guys have, yet we deal with all these issues. We have no authority. They have their rights and yada, yada, yada. And so we're really curious to see how you guys deal with this, and maybe there's lessons for us in terms of dealing with this as well, because we deal with the same young population. And again, just remember, 60% of the Marine Corps is under the age of 26.
Mm-hmm.
We turn over that 60%. Every 3 years, if you can imagine that.
And you're getting new joins once every several months. They're coming in groves all the time, backfilling everything.
Yeah, and so it's a young population, and that's why the supervision is important. All right, enough of that. Enough of current events. Hazing, it's a big deal. We're gonna switch gears right here, and we're gonna talk about the Marine Project. And so explain, when are you going to change the name? Come on, man.
The first day that I got here, I said, is this brand all-encompassing? It was funny because you're in that situation as an executive leader where you go, all right, this is our show now. Let's do we rebrand? Do we take the money that it takes, to redo it? And at this point in our cost analysis, it wasn't a high priority because it does have a national strength with that, with our chapters around the 8 states that we serve.
Okay.
But I say that we are soldiers of the sea. I'll preface to that. How stupid are people when they get this Marine guy in charge of the soldiers project? So I think God has a good sense of humor.
There's issues there. And so I'm expecting to say SOMAC, because it wasn't deeply branded, it's going to be changed here on November 10th.
You know, that's a good idea, except that I'm going to wait for the all-marine, you know, AMR to cut me the check that it's going to take to change your brand. You know what's funny is we changed our brand when I was at USC. It was the School of Social Work where I worked there last year, and it became, you know, we had a $60 million gift, which is now the Dwork Peck School of, you know, Social Work. But it's funny, the amount of money that it takes to change a brand, just as a donor, she gave $60 million. I hate to see what they, you know, everything's got to change. I mean, literally everything. So I was a little bit hesitant to coming in right away. And we already made enough changes as it was in here anyway.
All right. For people that aren't familiar with them, Mike, give them a thumbnail of what the Soldiers Project does and what you guys are all about.
The Soldiers Project is a mental and behavioral support organization that offers free, confidential, and unlimited mental and behavioral health for veterans and their loved ones, family members. We, regardless of discharge status. So that's what we do in a nutshell. We offer services in Southern California, as our chapter. We're obviously headquartered here in North Hollywood, California. But we service, young men and women, from San Diego all the way up to Sacramento in the state, offering telehealth, offering direct, therapy with licensed, providers. We're in Chicago, Seattle, New York, Pennsylvania, Texas, Wyoming, and a little bit of northern Colorado, with the expectation that we're gonna expand even further with our program.
All right. So your program is a unique program. So let's talk about that.
The uniqueness of it is that we are pro bono in our therapists. So our therapists don't. We don't own them, I guess you say. We don't hire them. They offer services, you know, so many hours per week, per month. And then what we essentially have become since 2004 was a referral service. And so you would call us. We would essentially do your intake for you or your family members. And, again, place you into a position that was geographically convenient to you. And at that point, you were owned by the – as a client, you were owned by the therapist. And so we're doing some things a little bit different, with the expectation that we want to basically become a virtual clinic, so that we own the client and the information that goes, because in mental health, the risk is held by the therapist themselves because of liability and all that. And so what we're trying to do now is we've started insuring ourselves. And then what we're going through our HIPAA, which is the HIPAA requirement is the identification, you know, as far as de-identified, you know, with personal protection, PII, and all that stuff that we talked about in the Marine Corps. It's the same thing. So we're going through that certification that we expect to be, you know, the first of the year next year we'll be complete and certified with that. And with that comes an EHR, an electronic health record, which we're looking at right now, which is a very costly, you know, thing. But we want to be able to get our clients into our database so that we can de-identify it and then use that data to drive our operations and to also, I guess, to push forward our agenda and our interest in helping our veterans and serve them better. And that's something that is very closed sometimes, because in the VA and other types of, you know, Department of Mental Health for counties, they don't share that information. And I want to be able to take that to DOD down the road here in the next year or two and say, listen, our program works. It's preventative. It costs less money, and it's more timely. And we can get support to our warriors much quicker than a lot of those institutions.
Okay. So – And one of the things in terms of what you guys do and who you do it for, talk about dependents, talk about discharges and characterization of discharges and your services.
Well, that's really important. It's one of our points of differentiation from VA and other organizations is that we will see loved ones. And that is something that is very important for a number of reasons. The first one involves understanding what the warrior's going through. understanding the reactions and the, you know, the panic attacks, anxiety, the other things that that person will deal with, and the preventative therapies that, that can be involved. We do group therapies. We do other, you know, individually, family counseling, marriage counseling. We have the availability of, one shoe doesn't fit all feet. And that's kind of the way we our, you know, our strategy.
Explain pro bono to people that you're speaking like officers speak, okay? Explain pro bono for everybody, just so they understand.
Pro bono, sure. Pro bono is just the agreement that you make that I want to offer my services to an organization. And we see this a lot in nonprofit for people who can't help themselves. So essentially it's free. So they donate that time, that hour. On our financials, we report our annuals. We just wrapped up our 2016 annual, which comes a year out later. Just came out a couple weeks ago, and we value that in our overall budget. So it's called in kind. So although we don't get, you know, we don't charge the client for those hours that they receive, we claim those as a financial capacity, I guess, or a value, and so we put that into our financials as in-kind. So that's another common term that you'll see in nonprofits. So we do that, and again, the nice thing about our organization is regardless of discharge status. So as many or may not know, you know, you have honorable, general under honorables, honorable conditions, and you have those two obviously receive care from VA. The last two, OTH, other than honorable, and then also bad conduct discharge, haven't historically received any benefits through the VA. So one of the nice things about us, we have quite a few of our clients that actually come through the OTH pipeline who would not normally get, you know, care. And so otherwise they'd have to go through CalVet or one of the state agencies. The problem, you know, and this is another important, you know, value that I think we bring to the population is, in our communities, is that confidentiality is very important. And people say, well, it's PII. No one's going to know what's going on. You know, if I go to a therapist, you know, well, they're just billing my insurance, you know. But I tell people this, it's very important that you understand that it is not confidential. That record is in the state records. So, now again, you may, if you're working at Walmart, it probably won't matter. But if you have a clearance or want to go into government contracting or if you want to be a police officer, they have you sign a disclosure statement in order to be apply. And that means that they can go back to all your medical records that are historically put onto paper or electronic record in some capacity. One of the things we don't do, because again, if you don't sign that, you're not even going to get looked at for a police, you know, a police position. So we see a lot of first responders. We see a lot of them that are veterans that need support. And with that, I think that's tremendous value because we are not going to bill. There is no record we have our own internally. We assign a number to a person, but that's it. And that's one thing that I think is of tremendous value to people transitioning, you know, especially, that gives us value.
All right. Because I know the vet centers of the VA, if you're seen there, they don't release their records to big VA, and so whatever happens at a vet center is confidential between you and them and is not plugged in, and so that's obviously one of the selling points of the vet centers. How is your arrangement different?
No, it's the same in that sense. The only difference is accessibility to care, because most of those vet centers are fairly close to vet, right, you know, vet facilities in and of itself. So one of the things that I've done when I came into this organization, I looked at this through the lens of a counterinsurgency. You know, how do you fight a counterinsurgency? Do you just build huge bases and then just expect everybody to come to you? I mean, that's not going to happen. So I built this model on a counterinsurgency model. And so instead of fighting the Taliban, we fight depression, anxiety, all that. So the goal on this is decentralization of your clinics. Because when we were starting to bring in focus groups, and these are all young people, older, you know, these are all eras. We had Vietnam vets, right, males, females. And we asked him, what do you want? You know, what do you want in your care? You know, if you're, because one of the goals that we have is when I took over, we're going to be client centered.
Right.
We're going to be data driven. We're going to look at this holistically, like this problem. And it's not just about mental health. This is about everything. Wraparound services, employment, unresolved legal issues, education benefits, VA benefits, all these things. Because when they come into us, they are in crisis. They don't, you know, Mac and I are, you know, you ain't driving down the road and saying, man, there's a mental health clinic. Let's stop in. Yeah, ain't gonna happen. You go because you are with a peer or you know somebody's going through the same thing and you say, hey Mac, I went through that, you know, divorce too. And guess what? I was crawling up the walls, man. And you know, I'll go with you. You know, let's do this together. So what I decided to do was the holistic focus. And then the last thing we're going to do is we're going to be great partners. You know, one of the things that we do here, and it's just like DOD and State Department when you're doing counterinsurgency, everything's in a silo. You know, they don't share information. You know, they try to go for the same, you know, the donors, the, you know, the same foundations. The more you interlock yourself with the strategic aim of another organization, and you're able to do what you do in your core competency extremely well, not do 20 things on average, you know, average quality, you actually give the client a better experience. And so what I'm trying to do with our partners around LA County to start, and we'll do this around the rest of Southern California, is we're going to go down there. And the first thing I did is I went around all of our leadership that are in, you know, U.S. Vets and New Directions and Volunteers of America. I sat down with those executive directors and said, listen, what can I do to help you make your mission? And I went out there with the olive branch and I met all these people, and literally it was the greatest thing I did, because now they know we're not jumping into their Kool-Aid. You know, they know that, hey, we're going to do this. We can do this. Let us take this. We'll give you that. You know, and let's share information. That's very, very important. And then you can't bring in because people can't replicate that. You know, the relationships are how you run nonprofits. So that's why we're trying to change this a little bit. So again, going back to what I think is valuable to us, is we're decentralizing our locations. And what those focus groups said, and I got a lot of information from them, was that we are not willing to go more than 30 minutes for mental and behavioral health, because it takes a period of time, whether you're going 8 to 12 visits or you're going for 2 years, you have to go there every week. It's not going to work if you're driving 25 miles from, well, you're in Orange County, and, you know, you're going to come downtown to the LA, VA. It's not sustainable. And so what I did was I said, screw this, we're going to do things differently. What we're going to do is we're going to continue doing our decentralized approach with our providers all over LA County. I just did this for the pilot because I wanted to see where this was at. So as much of a nerd as we are, as, you know, R2P2 people, I took Salesforce of all of our clients. We have over 400, well, we got over 500 now nationally, clinicians that are vetted, that are actual sales or Soldiers Project people. And so I took only the ones in LA County, and I did a map plot on those and charted every single one of their addresses where they offer services. And so we had all these teardrops all over the county. Then what I did is I took all of our clients that we have, and then I took the template overlay and laid them on top of each other, and I found some really interesting things. The first thing is most of our pro bono therapists are very wealthy, because when I say wealthy, they can afford to donate hours, and they're very, very old. Most of them are, you know, like close to retirement.
Right.
So I looked at our growth trajectory and I said, well, this isn't going to be good, because one, they're going to retire ultimately and then I'm going to lose them. And so I'm having a difficult time recruiting them on the back end as young ones coming out of school, because they have too much debt ratio, you know, leverage. So they can't donate hours, because that's a $200, $250 charge an hour to do therapy.
Right.
So what I did is I said, okay, how can we crack this code? First of all, I looked at the map chip and said, we got huge holes in providers. The big hole that we found, and this isn't probably surprising to you because you know the area pretty well, was Lancaster-Palmdale, which is a challenge in itself,
right.
San Gabriel Valley,
right.
East of Pasadena and back and east.
Lancaster-Palmdale is mostly like hillbillies up there, right?
Well, it is, but there's a huge base there.
I know.
Up there, that Air Force base. So a lot of them filter out of there, and it's very inexpensive to live there. And so that's why you see a large amount of people there, but there's no providers.
How does the Air Force have mental health issues? They have everything. They have low stress, right? They have the yellow card at boot camp. They have low stress. They live in the high quality of life. What are they dealing with?
Well, they got to worry about tailoring their uniforms because they start expanding, you know, significantly. But
be careful, they might be listening to you.
I love them. I love them.
I'll tell you what you're talking about is the reason why I had to stop seeing a therapist. And I've been really fortunate with the VA. Both my therapists were Vietnam era infantrymen. So it's like walking in their office, they had their I Love Me stuff in there. I was like, yeah, I've been here before. It was home. But I was driving from Orange County up to Culver City to see my guy every week. And as I got more busy with All Marine Radio, I couldn't do it. And I wanted to do it, but a lot of them don't like to do it by video. They said it's not the same. Yeah. It's not the same. So I'm curious because what you're talking about is actually happened to me.
Yeah. Well, and I will tell you, so looking at this problem, we found South Central was another one. Long Beach, east of Long Beach is a big one. And then, so those were our main areas. And I don't have therapists in that area. So I thought to myself, how can we solve this problem? And so my wife is going through her Master of Social Work program at USC. She's a military and family focus. Okay, so again, you know, that's what she's doing. There are, in her second year internship, there's no internships available, and these are year-long internships, where you can do military clinical hours. They're impossible to get. Now you can go to VA if you're adults, you know, if you're in healthy living as your focus.
Right.
But children and obviously families don't go to VA. So that was one of the things I thought, well, that's a gap. We have a strength because I need therapists. Well, guess what we're going to do? We're going to bring these interns in and we're going to develop this pilot program in San Gabriel Valley in conjunction with Azusa Pacific. And we're going to place interns at satellite locations all over San Gabriel Valley with their supervisors. And it's a natural 1-2 fit. And they're going to give us facilities, because if you're familiar with Azusa Pacific, they got those satellite campuses all over the place. Well, they want us to go into those facilities to do therapy. I said, are you kidding me? This is incredible.
Okay, let me ask you the hard question, though. What am I going to talk to a fucking intern about? That's one of the problems that a lot of us have is like, I'm going to come in and talk to you about my shit. Like, fuck, you've never been out of L.A. Like, look, I know L.A. can get hairy sometimes, but the places I've been, I'm not. And so I'm a little, I don't want to say judgmental, but Mike, help me get over that. What do you tell guys in terms of looking for therapists and getting help? Because let me tell you, and like I said, I was so lucky. The guys that I met were infantrymen, for God's sakes, you know. And the first one looked at me and said, "Hey, can I tell you something?" And I said, "Yeah," and he said, "You're fucked up." And I started laughing, right?
But that wasn't the first time anybody said that to me. So I'm like, well, which one? How long ago did you notice this?
And he said, we haven't even got to your combat shit, man. You're fucked up. But you'll be okay. You'll be okay. He said, it's a good thing you came in here. But it made me feel like home. I knew I wasn't going to be judged because, you know, he knew the things that I was talking about. He could finish my sentences, but he didn't because he's a good dude. And then the second one was the same way when I moved up to West LA. And both of them just random, random guys. But, you know, they're telling me about Marble Mountain and places in Vietnam where they fought. And you're like, holy shit, man, this guy gets it. How do we relate? And this is a serious question because it's important to your business. How do we relate our experiences to people that don't have them?
Well, that's a great misconception that people have. People think that you have to be going through those experiences personally before you become a good therapist, and that's actually contrary. What we find data-wise is that those experiences that Vietnam vets, if they did happen to go into therapy, you can actually get second-hand traumatic stress from sharing information from those veterans.
Come on, we all hear that and think bullshit. Come on, man.
Believe me, the secondhand trauma is a significant issue for therapists because these young people. When I say young people, by the way, I'll preface this in saying our young people coming out. When they sit down and look at an intern, I could stack you interns and professional licensed people across the board, and you couldn't tell the difference between the two physically. They're not 21 or 22 year old men and women. They are people who are 35, 40 years old, second career people. Many of them were spouses of veterans. And because you don't have to be in those experiences to be a great therapist. It doesn't matter. For us, what we want when we ask our clients is, what do you want? And I want to know if someone's listening. Okay. It doesn't matter what the place looks like. They could do it in a closet, broom closet. They don't care. What they want is someone that'll listen to them. What you have in an intern is they're supervised. They're not just turned loose. These people have gone through 2 years of theory and now they're practicing what they have. Because we have a moral obligation to train the next generation of therapists. We have a shortfall in this country, and we can't meet the demand. And if we don't train these people firsthand on the trauma that is a unique trauma, with combat stress, but trauma is trauma, and the cognitive behavioral therapies, CPT, cognitive processing therapy, prolonged exposure, all these different evidence-based practices, they're using those techniques. And yeah, they're not going to be a 25-year veteran yet, but we have to change the culture so that we can bring these, baby social workers up, because these people, again, are very, very seasoned people.
Okay. And all right. I'll accept that. So, I'll accept that answer. So give me the coordinating instructions, because my primary concern going there is not to develop some intern for somebody else in 40 years. Okay. My interest is me. I've got problems. I need help. So give me the coordinating instructions. If I'm not comfortable, what do I do?
I'm going to give you, because we are client-centered,
okay.
I'm going to say, Mac, what do you want your therapy to look like? That's the first question we're going to ask you. Do you want to do this long-term? Do you want to just deal with this unemployment crisis that you're going through right now? What do you want? And then you say, well, I just want this, I'm stressed because I don't have a family.
I'll answer this. I want to get better. I want to get better. I know I can't dial it back and eliminate what I've gone through out of my life. I want to be able to coexist with it in a way that doesn't impact my family to any great extent. Minor impacts are okay. Little tremors are actually exciting for my family at times. But I don't want my family to be afraid. I don't want them, I don't want their quality of life to be impacted by what I've gone through and my inability to make heads or tail of it. And I'm willing, if it takes me to be involved longer, I'm willing to be involved longer. If you've got a shorter prescription for me, I'm all about learning about that. But the end state that I need for my family is for the pressure about how's dad going to react, needs to go away so that they can live happy, normal lives, and that I can coexist with the monster that's under my bed.
Mm-hmm. That's powerful. That's powerful, man.
I don't want to say I don't want to say it's true, but it might be.
I know. Brother, I'm with you. And that's totally our story.
Exactly. You know? That 99% of guys listening and women listening that have our experiences, right, some worse than others, are bobbing their head going, yep.
But see, here's the deal. I don't have a problem. Okay, this is the other part. Well, I don't have the problem. It's just my wife.
Oh, really? Who says that?
Yeah, that nobody I know.
Nobody I know.
Papers. Get your crap together, or I'm walking. You know that. By the way, again, I don't have a problem. I just. My balls are forward for a reason. I'm just pressing. I got to keep going, keep moving, but. That's a tremendous, that's a storyline. I can put that on a tape and of course play it back. And that's a great point. And I would say to you, okay, this is what we have. We have these two therapists that are available you know, again, there's different types of therapy. You know, again, you want a psychoanalytical therapist where, you know, you want to go for 2 to 3, you know, years if necessary. Do you want to go to a person that practices evidence-based practices where you, you know, could do 8 to 10 visits? What is appropriate for you? You got a full-time job. You know, here's the deal. I can get you in probably in 7-8 days with a more seasoned, you know, person, or I can get you in tomorrow with one of our supervised interns that we have coming from Azusa Pacific or USC or Columbia, because we have all these people on staff already. And again, we can start you off with that. If that's somebody that you feel trusted with, then we'll stay there. If you want to go and look for something else, we can do that too. You know, again, these people are going to be in the seat for about a year. So typically these visits, you know, they're going to be done. Your normal therapy is going to be done before they even get out. So you're going to have the same therapist the whole time. Because that was one thing that I was very sensitive of, is changing and telling a story 15 times. You know,
yeah, well, the problem is most Marines just stop going. I know a kid, he was in Ramadi in 2005, saved probably 30 Marines and Iraqi soldiers. They had a tandem vehicle-borne ID. They were on Route Michigan between so we're going to talk a little bit of code here. They were on Route Michigan in Ramadi between Hurricane Point and the Governance Center. And he's up on the top deck. He's a PFC. Him and his SAW. And they get engaged by RPGs and PKM, I think, down the street. From the other direction, all of a sudden, boom, they all get knocked on the deck. The proverbial white opal had detonated just outside the gate. He shakes it off. He stands up. And coming through the smoke, what do you think he sees? A fucking water truck. And he says, without anybody giving him an order, he looks and says, holy shit, they told me this would happen like this. And he engages, without anybody telling him to, he engages the water truck. And because that this exchange had started, one of the drones flying overhead slewed their camera to the building. And this thing detonates, because obviously it had a dead man switch. This thing detonates and knocks down two buildings. It looks like dominoes getting knocked down. Yeah, you're watching and you're going, holy shit. So he's from North Dakota. I was doing my radio show up there. I read about it in the paper. I have him on, and his name's Brian Nagel. And I have him on, and he tells the story. And he got it. This is shitty, but I'll say it. He got a Navy comm with a V. Now, if you jump on a grenade and save one person, you get the Medal of Honor. You do everything we teach you to as a PFC. And he got a Navy comm with a V. And I threw a fit. I'm like, are you shitting me? But anyway, that's a different issue. He comes home after he saw his fourth therapist at the VA in North Dakota. He just stopped going. He stopped going. He said, I'll deal with this myself. But I'm not going to go tell my story another time to another person. I'm not.
Well, and that's one of the things that we're focused on. And I just can't do that to, you know, our warriors. It's just not going to happen under my watch. And so we give you the option. If you want to wait another 7-8 days and get somebody that's, you know, obviously been, you know, in this business for a lot longer. But again, I don't think you're going to know the difference because of the, again, we as professional people, you're in mental and behavioral health, you might be able to identify the other two. But the thing about interns is they're hungry. They want to learn. They want to learn your story. You know, they want to be able, they'll never be able to relate to it. And they'll tell you that right away. But the thing is they can use these therapies that are absolutely winnable therapies to help, you know, to allow you to live with your family effectively. And again, that's where the whole thing comes in with what the client wants. They're willing to do that. And I'm confident, again, they're under supervision. They're getting evaluated. You know, they're doing, you know, case review with, you know, weekly with their supervisors. I mean, they are hungry, and a lot of them have been in the business. You know, they've been spouses, they've been, you know, veterans themselves even, you know, as they, you know, using their 9/11 bill to finish school. So, So I, you know, that's important to us. The other thing that we're trying to also do is we're implementing a new program.
Hold on. Before we go to the new program, I got an email for you. Mac, I know a caregiver, husband, gunshot wound to the head. He is recovered, but she will be a caregiver for the rest of her life. He has moments when he is the guy that he used to be, but for the most part, he's probably a 15-year-old to 17-year-old young man, and he'll remain that way for the rest of his life. Her life, and many women like her, have been substantially changed. The dilemma they find themselves in is a tough one. Like anybody, particularly like we crave intimacy. We need intimacy in our lives. Their future doesn't have intimacy in it. They've lost their partner. Do they provide services for caregivers? And are they free? So, Mike?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We would the same counseling, the same kind of therapy that we would offer our warriors, because she's going through significant, oh, Lord, that's just a terrible scenario. And we're very, very sensitive to that. And it would be free. It would be unlimited, confidential, and wouldn't cost her anything. So.
Okay. So the answer is yes.
Yes.
And let me tell you, I've learned about, you know, different, as you peel the onion on going on 17 months of All Marine Radio, and you get exposed to different stories, that's one that I didn't have a whole lot, had never given that much thought to. But, you know, your husband's not dead, he's still alive. Mm-hmm. You know, do you abandon him? What kind of woman does that? And yet, they've lost their husband in many ways. He's still physically
like
here. Yeah,
he's
still physically here. Mm-hmm. But who do I talk to? Who do I unburden myself to? And it's a brutal reality that those women encounter, and then have to live. Do I stay committed to somebody, or God Almighty? Do I shame myself and divorce him and abandon him? I can't do that. I've seen him through this. So just it's
what a moral injury.
Oh my God!
What a moral injury.
No, you hear it. It's heartbreaking. Heartbreaking. Who do I talk to? Who do I sit and watch the movie with at night and joke and enjoy subtle humor with? All the things that brought he and I so close together that we don't share anymore. Where do I find that? What do I do? Caregiver support is one of the things that I didn't know shit about. And you know, my awakening started, I don't like that word, but my epiphany started, yeah. my epiphany started, you know, with talking to people, that helped, get, the Semper Fi Fund going. You know, all the issues that they went through, why they started it, why it's such a great organization now. Is in what they focused on, trying to solve problems as the Key Wife Network was overwhelmed by the sheer amount of death, in Iraq and Afghanistan. And we ultimately evolved to a more professional, body to do that incredibly difficult work. But at first it was wives in the 1st Marine Division specifically, that were dealing with all those issues, financial issues, emotional issues, all that stuff, and how they got going. So very, very interesting. My guest this morning, is, Mike Maxwell. He's the, do you have a little bit more time, Mike?
Yeah, go ahead. I have plenty.
Okay. He is the, he's the executive director of the Soldiers Project, and, he is centered in Los Angeles, retired Marine major, artilleryman. Mike, we got to take a couple-minute break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about your new project.
All right. Thank you.
You bet. More of All Marine Radio. Here on a Wednesday, we're talking mental health. We're talking the Soldiers Project. It's a novel, interesting program, and serves people, serves dependents, serves people that got out with a discharge that was characterized in a way that would take their benefits away, and that happened. So more of that coming up next on a Wednesday edition of All Marine Radio right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. Are you looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military, for a first responder, for a hunter, for an outdoorsman, or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you. The Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled machine anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, battlemug.com.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Yeah, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it. You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. None await on a Wednesday hump day. I'm joined by Mike Maxwell. He's the executive director of the don't laugh. That's me sliding through that thing. You're not supposed to call any additional attention to it. He's the executive director of the Soldiers Project, and it's been going here for a while, and we're going to have a conversation about the new program. So tell us what's new in the zoo.
We have a program that we're rolling out here in the months ahead, and I it may be sooner than later, I don't know. But one of the things that we did, and we talked about this briefly, of what makes you go into mental health,
right,
particularly, and it's peer support. There's a lot of different peer support programs around the, around the country right now, and they're great, they build relationships, but we have kind of a unique proposition. The first thing is with mental health, the way we have it now, that is one serious component of about six different holistic elements, as we spoke about. Employment and education and VA benefits, all that stuff. So what we're building now in our guidebook is we're building a philosophy that will enable corporate America to be a part of the solution.
Ooh.
One of the things that they do, they advertise that they hire veterans, and I was just listening to Turner Construction.
Yeah.
Hiring people. Because I think there's a small amount of people that do that, but it's not something that fits all transitioning members. First of all, it's easy to get somebody out to make it $15 an hour, as a Lance Corporal. That's an easy placement. But for people like us who are senior staff NCOs or, mid-level managers as officers, we have a difficult time coming out and making relatively the same amount of money we did come, you know, obviously when we were in.
Right.
And so what I'm trying to do is build a value proposition for companies to be able to take the TAP process, you know, or whatever it's TRP or TR, whatever the new acronym is, for the Transition Assistance Program, and be able to help with our numbers that we're seeing right now with homelessness. I have some staggering information that I received here about 2 weeks ago, and I have it written on my whiteboard, and I'll tell you, it is absolutely makes me focus my effort toward helping our veterans. And this is beyond mental behavioral health. But we have over this is in LA County alone, okay, I have 4,478 veterans that are unsheltered or sheltered but homeless. Okay, and that's up 64% from 2016. Now, what I found from that is, again, 45% of those people evaluated have serious mental illness. Okay, 20% drug users, 49% first time being homeless. Why does that happen? And I believe that they're ill prepared to come into a market, a community market like Los Angeles County. It's very difficult. Now, San Diego's a little easier transition because you're right there. You can do job interviews and all that stuff during your terminal process, all that stuff. So that's easier. But if you're leaving that general area of San Diego or Oceanside and you're coming to LA, what makes you successful in LA? Because when you go to that TAP course, and I was one of them, you're like, I just need the signature so I can get out of here. Right. You know, I already have a resume. I do all this stuff. What gives those people the opportunity to come into this and be successful is, one, they have a plan. And you and I have talked about this before. You know, what's your plan, devil dog? I'm going to go to school. I'm going to go to community college. I'm taking my GI Bill. I'm living in, you know, I'm going to live in, you know, West LA, and I'm going to go to West LA Community College, and I want to be an actor. And you go, that ain't going to happen, you know, because you can't afford to live there. But they don't know this stuff. So what I'm doing is I'm developing a training program, a peer support specialist training program. We're calling them peer support facilitators, because I don't like mentorship, because that makes it seem like one's higher than the other one. But I'm working right now. We're building a partnership with just this beta for this pilot. With NBC Universal. And so they have a lot of interest. They already have existing programs like Boeing and Lockheed Martin and Lowe's and Home Depot, all these companies that supposedly hire vets, is they already have veterans inside. So they already have a network that I can pull from. They meet as community partners or, you know, the outreach teams or whatever. So they're already there. So I'm going to grab volunteers, and those peer support facilitators have to be veterans or spouses of veterans. And then what we're going to do is we're going to train them. We're going to give them about a $10,000 training package for NBC Universal, where they become certified. And then what they're going to do is they're going to build relationships with people that are transitioning 180 days left of their EAS. This is very important, because if I can get them 6 months out, I can help them navigate the process. Now, these people that are peer support facilitators aren't people that you're necessarily calling when you're, you know, have a, you know, about ready to suck start a 9
right.
mil or something.
Right.
That's not that level. This is the level that basically allows you to say, hey, Mac, I understand, you know, we meet on Skype, I call you. Hey, we vet these people, obviously, and we try to place them with people of your equal rank. So if you're a Lance Corporal coming out, you're going to be with somebody probably that's been out 5, 6, 10 years that was a corporal, you know, that's now, you know, in the entry level of, you know, managing program or something. And then you or like say, let's say you're, you know, you were a senior or a middle, you know, range field grade officer, lieutenant colonel, major, and then basically we'll match you up with someone in upper management potentially that would be more equivalent, you know, so that they can kind of understand, you know, what they do, how they do it. Now, you may not even have an interest in NBC Universal, but you can tie into their network, because you may want to go into construction management. Well, guess what? They're going to be connected with people in their own communities because they know how to ask the right questions. One, where you can live. You know, and you're a corporal, for example. When I say, where do you want to live? West LA. I said, it ain't going to happen. You have a car? And you go, no. Well, we need to get you on a metro line. You know, we need to get you into probably East County or maybe Santa Clarita, where we can get you in and out of the community very, very quickly.
When is this coming online?
Well, we're trying to get this early in 2018. We're working right now with some with contractual issues with memorandums of understanding and stuff with NBC Universal. But see, it's important that we also give them something. they're going to now see Mac as a you know, exiting veteran for 6 months. I'm going to basically get a 6 month interview. You are right. To see if you're really a fit for us,
because
you may not be a fit for us,
right.
And that's okay.
Right.
But it's more it's risk adverse for them.
Right.
They also allow them to have an in-house trained crisis management group that works in their PR, you know, their HR department that they can, you know, deploy for veteran crisis issues inside their house, you know, stress. One of the things that people don't realize is that it is illegal. We are a protected class of people.
Huh?
So what happens a lot of times when people are hired and they have post-traumatic stress, for example, and believe me, we transition poorly because we don't understand the cultural changes. Now you changed from, you know, utilities to a polo shirt or a tie, and you're at NBC Universal. Guess what you're going to be? You're going to be loud. You know, they find out you're a Marine, you're going to be threatening because you're loud. We're direct. You know, hey, you're freaking. That's the worst plan I've ever seen. You know, you say that to each other, but civilians, they're, you know, crying down their leg. I mean, literally, they're intimidated, and you can be a hostile work environment very, very shortly. You know, maybe they self-medicate or something. They start going down that road. Well, now you already have peer support people that are already in your house. So now they can help, again, answer those questions, help them through the HR process, you know, how to act, those kind of things to keep them employed, because that's very, very important. Otherwise, they fire them, and again, they can't do that.
Who can't do that?
They cannot. Well, corporate cannot do that. Legally, we're a protected class citizen. The same way you would have somebody that's missing, you know, that's missing both arms, you know, but they have a way of performing their job. You just can't fire them because they can't type fast enough.
So you can't fire you can't fire a veteran, or what can
you can? Well, you just have to document it appropriately that it's not a good fit. But what I'm saying is they can't discriminate, and that's what happens too often, and they don't even know this. You know, is it our culture that we came from, you know, that we're loud, or are we really just, you know, a not a team player, you know, because we get branded as, you know, rigid, doesn't play well with others, you know, loud, vulgarity, you know, those kinds of things.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so that's you've transitioned. You know what I'm talking about. So
no, I never transitioned.
Those are things
I started my own business, so I wouldn't have to.
That's true. Well, you don't have your own HR. You are your own HR.
I'm
so you're going to shit can yourself.
I'm hiding. I'm hiding.
You're fired, Mac. You're fired.
I was told that you're probably not employable. And I said, what does that mean?
That's such a discriminative. That is so.
Okay, and here's what I got told. How are you going to react when your civilian boss tells you to do something that you don't want to do? I said, that's a good question. And Mac, what happens if you don't really respect them? I said, what are you trying to draw the perfect storm for me? I said, look, I need a job, you know, so you do it. You know, I'm not a 16-year-old kid. You know, but I'm frustrated. Can you hide your frustration? That's a good question. I'm not good at faking it anymore when I'm unhappy. He said,
yeah.
Okay. How long can you stay like that? I'm like, well, I think I can fake it for a long time if I need the money. I'm like, okay, so do you think there might be something that might set you off? Maybe. Okay. You need to find something. A work situation where, you know, you can be with people that you respect. But I will tell you an interesting thing that happened to me was, and I've got another interview, Mike. And, you know, we can have you back next week and we can finish up.
Okay.
I got told by guys that I pinged on LinkedIn, don't talk about your combat experiences. Don't tell them you've been to Iraq and Afghanistan. Don't say anything about post-traumatic stress because they're terrified and you will not get hired. And I didn't get that from one guy. I got that from multiple guys. I was like, whoa. Like, yeah, they say they want to hire veterans. They don't want to hire you, all right, because you scare the Marines, first of all, in general, that will get their attention. You've been to Iraq, and then you start, if they say in the interview, they say, so where in Iraq were you? If you bomb, like, Ramadi, Fallujah on them, you are so not getting hired.
What do you tell them? I was a targeting guy. I basically made target packages for,
yeah,
you know.
No, they said lie. Don't tell them the truth.
Yeah.
Don't do everything you can do to not talk about that and just say, oh, you know, I served. Yeah, I was part of RBE. I was part of Remain Behind Element. Now, you were only part of RBE for like 3 days before you went forward, so it's technically not a lie.
Hey, it's a truthful statement. Hey, I got to tell you something. As we wrap this up, I got to tell you something. This is totally unconnected with what we're talking about. I'm over there. My son goes to Loyola High School downtown now in LA, and of course, great prep school, all boys. I'm sitting down talking to a buddy of mine. His name's Omi Ishmael. I got to give him a little plug there. I got to tell you, he and I know each other. He's from New York originally, right? And he's a patriot, never served, computer guy, has his own company, you know, does really well. And I said to him, we were watching the boys on the football game, the freshman game on Saturday. He goes, I got to tell you something, Mike. He goes, do you know a guy, this is really crazy, do you know a guy named Chris Bronte?
Are you shitting me?
I almost like literally my mouth dropped and I go, Chris Bronte, I know him well. I served with him. I was in two different really ugly locations with the guy. You know, I said he was with First Marines when I was there, and of course you were there as well. And I said that's unbelievable. And so he goes, yeah, we were high school classmates. We were like four of us, five of us that were really, really close. And
did
so
you ask him? Is Bronze? So tell us, is Bronze a dick? Did you ask him that?
I said, I got to get Bronzy's. So you got to hook me up with his, because he wants to get in touch with him, and I don't have his number. So send that to me on email.
Only if he answers the question. Was Bronzy a dick in high school? I want
to
know.
You know, he did say, I won't say it on the air. I'll talk to you offline on it, but it was really, really funny about his Naval Academy experience. And I didn't realize he was a merchant marine. That guy was a merchant marine.
Was he?
It's a very interesting story. Bronzy's the man.
You know what? First of all, Bronzy, also known as Joker 6, and a man with one of the most unique laughs ever in the history of the planet.
That's what I told him. I said exactly what I said. I said, his laugh is so unique, and you hear him just bop, 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 you know, when he's laughing. And I remember the CP, you know, over at First Marines, you know, when he would just be, because he was doing the futures.
You hear it, you're like, and I asked him once, I said, Bronzy, when you were a kid, how did your parents and your like brothers and sisters not beat the shit out of you? Was that like a cry for help? Is that the way you got attention? Is that the way you got attention as a kid? And he's like, Mac, no. It's the way I laugh. I'm like, no, nobody on the planet laughs like that. Even people that laugh loud aren't confused with that. So that's a good story. Bronzy.
Well, what's the chances? I mean, what's the mathematical probability of running into someone in L.A.?
Zero.
I mean,
and say, do you know Chris Bronzy? Like, what?
I'm like, I go, what? How do you know him?
And let me compare
New York. We were best friends.
Oh my God! And then let me compare that to what's the guy's name?
His name is Omi Ishmael.
Omi Ishmael.
Yeah.
So, like, in terms of probability, back in the day, you could be in the middle of anywhere, in the middle of the desert, and you could look at your platoon and say, all right, everybody pull out your Pacers card. Now, Pacers is a strip club in San Diego, and you would get at least 60% of them in the middle of nowhere, out of jungle in the Philippines or whatever, to pull out the Pacers card. There you go. Right?
My wife works there. You know, that's interesting. My future wife.
I met my girl there.
Right. I have my survivor's benefit package going to one of them, actually.
Yeah, and if you ask them, you know, do you have everybody pull out your $10? Nobody has those, right? Your Pacers card? Yeah. So in terms of probability, that gives you some kind of idea in terms of that. Anyway. All right, Mike, first of all, appreciate you doing this. People that are looking for more information about helping people, especially, you know, I mean, you know, what you do for dependents, what you do for people with OTHs and discharges that eliminate benefits is absolutely awesome. Where can they find you guys? How do they get in touch with you guys?
We're at Soldiers Project. Our direct line here is 818-761-7438, 818-761-7438, and we're available on the line at www.thesoldiersproject.org. Again, no apostrophe, just thesoldiersproject.org. And, again, great talking to you, and hopefully we talk soon.
All right, bud. Have a good day. Thanks.
All right. Semper Fi.
Semper Fidelis. That is Michael McDowell, retired Major, United States Marine Corps. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Michael Musselman, another Michael, will join us. Don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.